A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one, and it's one of those questions that feels small until you realize it explains roughly half the frustrated phone calls to customer service departments everywhere. He's asking about the difference between an authorization hold and an actual charge on a credit card. The confusion is everywhere because merchants handle this inconsistently. Some charge immediately on online orders, others only authorize and don't finalize until delivery is confirmed. And the apps people use to track their spending show these holds as if they're charges, which means when a transaction gets cancelled, you have no idea whether money actually left your account. His core question, how can a savvy consumer actually tell the difference?
This is one of those topics where the infrastructure is genuinely fascinating and the user experience is terrible, and those two things are directly related. Let me start with what's actually happening on the back end, because once you understand the mechanism, spotting the difference becomes almost second nature.
Almost second nature? That's generous! I've been looking at credit card statements for decades, and I still have moments where I squint at a pending transaction and think, are you real? Or are you a ghost?
Let's fix that. An authorization hold, sometimes called a pre-authorization or a card auth, is not a charge. It's a temporary freeze on a specific amount of your available credit. When you swipe your card at a gas pump, or check into a hotel, or place an online order, the merchant's payment processor sends a request to your card issuer that essentially says, does this card have at least this much available credit, and can we reserve it? The issuer says yes or no. If yes, that amount gets set aside. It hasn't been transferred. The merchant hasn't been paid. Your money is still in your account, or your credit line is still yours, but a portion of it is cordoned off.
It's like putting a book on hold at a library. The book is still on the shelf, but nobody else can take it. You haven't checked it out yet.
And the key detail most people don't realize is that an authorization hold has a built-in expiration clock. Under the major card network rules, Visa, MasterCard, American Express, an authorization typically expires after 7 days for most merchant categories. Some categories get longer. Hotels and car rentals can hold authorizations for up to 30 days because the final bill isn't known at the time of check-in.
Which is why you check out of a hotel on a Sunday, and on Wednesday, the hold is still sitting there looking like you paid twice.
You didn't. The hold and the final charge often appear simultaneously for a window of time, and that's where the I've been double charged panic comes from. The hold drops off. The issuer releases the reserved amount, but that release isn't instantaneous in the consumer-facing interface. It can take 24 to 72 hours for a released authorization to disappear from your banking app, even though the hold has already been lifted on the back end.
Part of the confusion is a rendering problem. What the bank's internal systems know and what the app shows you are out of sync. It's like when you delete a file from your computer and the icon sits there on the desktop for a few seconds before vanishing. The deletion happened instantly, but the visual layer hasn't caught up.
That's a perfect analogy. And just like with a computer desktop, different banking apps refresh at different speeds. Some pull a fresh state every time you open the app. Others cache your transaction list and only update every few hours or when you pull down to refresh. So you could have a hold that was released Monday morning, but your app cached the state from Sunday night and you're looking at it Tuesday afternoon convinced you've been double charged. The app is showing you a ghost.
A ghost in the machine. Literally, in this case. And that's the first practical tip. If you see what looks like a duplicate charge after a hotel stay or a rental car return, wait 3 business days before you call anyone. In something like 90% of cases, the hold vanishes on its own.
When you do call, you save yourself the 20-minute hold time only to have the agent say exactly that. Wait 3 days and it'll drop off.
That's the easy case. The prompt is really about the harder one. Online orders where the merchant's behavior is all over the map.
Let's map out the 3 common patterns. Pattern 1, immediate capture. You place an order, and within seconds, the merchant both authorizes and captures the transaction. On your statement, it shows up as a finalized charge, no pending notation, or it moves from pending to posted almost immediately. Amazon does this. Most large e-commerce platforms do this. The authorization and the capture happen in the same API call, effectively.
For the consumer, there's no ambiguity. It's a charge. Money's moved.
Pattern 2. Authorize at order, capture at shipment. This is extremely common with smaller retailers, clothing brands, anything made to order or with variable inventory. They place the hold when you click buy, but they don't finalize the charge until a shipping label is generated. The hold ensures you have the funds, but they're not taking your money until they've actually put the product in a box.
If the item goes out of stock between order and fulfillment, the hold just expires. You were never charged, even though your banking app showed a pending transaction for 5 days. This happens to me constantly with limited run sneaker drops. You think you scored a pair. The pending charge appears, you celebrate. And then 3 days later, the order gets cancelled because they oversold their inventory. The hold vanishes, and you're left with no sneakers and a strange feeling of financial whiplash.
That whiplash is exactly the scenario that generates the most confusion. You see the transaction, you think you paid, the order gets cancelled, the transaction disappears, and now you're unsure whether you need to follow up or whether it was handled correctly. The answer is, if it was a pending transaction that vanished, you were never charged. If it was a posted transaction, you need to watch for a refund.
Pending versus posted is the tell. But here's the problem. Every banking app renders these differently. Some use a dimmed out font. Some put a little clock icon. Some just list everything in the same bold text. And the only difference is a single word in 6-point type. The visual design is doing nobody any favors.
The inconsistency across issuers is maddening. There's no regulatory standard for how pending authorizations must be displayed. The Truth in Lending Act and Regulation Z govern disclosure of credit terms, but they don't specify the UI of a mobile banking app. So Chase might show pending transactions in gray italics, while a credit union's app shows them in the same black bold as everything else, and a fintech like Chime or Revolut might group them under a separate pending header that you have to scroll past the posted transactions to even see.
Which means the savvy consumer Daniel's asking about has to learn the visual language of their specific issuer. There's no universal visual grammar. It's like if every car manufacturer put the fuel gauge in a different corner of the dashboard and used different symbols for empty.
That's exactly the right analogy. And imagine if you rented a car and had to learn where the fuel gauge was every single time. That's what switching banks feels like. You go from an app where pending transactions are clearly flagged with a yellow dot to an app where they're indistinguishable from posted charges, and suddenly you don't know how to read your own financial life.
Let's say I've just switched banks. I'm looking at a new app. What am I actually looking for?
There are universal structural tells even if the visual design varies. Let me give you the checklist. Number 1. Pending transactions almost always list the merchant name as it appeared at the point of sale, while posted transactions often show a slightly different, more formal merchant descriptor. If you see Amazon MKTP Lace PMTS, that's a posted charge. If you see something slightly different or truncated, it might still be pending.
Number 2. Pending transactions don't have a transaction date that matches the date they appeared. They'll show the authorization date, which might be today, but they won't have a posted date. If there's only one date and it says pending, it's a hold.
Number 3. And this is the one most people don't know. You can call your issuer's automated phone system and ask for your available credit versus your current balance. If the amount in question has been deducted from your available credit but not added to your current balance, it's an authorization hold. The money is reserved, not spent.
That's a good trick. The phone system doesn't lie the way a UI does.
It really doesn't. The back-end distinction between available credit and current balance is the canonical source of truth, and it's always accurate even when the transaction list is lagging. I've tested this. I've had an app show me a pending charge for 3 days while the automated phone system confirmed the hold had already been released. The phone system queries the actual ledger. The app queries a cached representation of the ledger.
There's a hierarchy of truth. Phone system beats app. And I assume a human agent beats the phone system. Or is that just the same data?
A human agent is looking at the same back-end system the phone system reads from, but they can also initiate actions. The phone system is read only. The agent can actually do something about a stuck hold, which we'll get to. But for pure information, the phone system is as accurate as a human, and faster.
Let's talk about the merchant inconsistency problem, because I think that's the deeper thing the prompt is getting at. Why do some online merchants capture immediately, and others wait until delivery? What drives that choice?
Two factors, cash flow and dispute risk. If you're a small merchant, capturing funds immediately improves your cash position. You get paid now, not in 5 to 7 business days when the item ships. But there's a trade-off. Card network rules generally require that you don't capture funds until you've actually shipped the goods. If you capture at order time and then can't fulfill for 3 weeks, you're technically in violation of your merchant agreement, and if the customer files a dispute, you'll lose.
The merchants who capture immediately are either large enough to absorb the dispute risk, or they ship so fast that the gap between order and fulfillment is negligible.
Or they're in a category where immediate fulfillment is the norm. Digital goods, food delivery, ride sharing. Uber authorizes and captures in the same breath because the service is delivered instantly. There's no shipping to wait for.
On the other end, you've got furniture retailers who might take your order in March, authorize the card, and not capture until the sofa is actually on a truck in June. That authorization might expire and get re-upped multiple times.
Which is perfectly legal under card network rules, by the way. Recurring or extended authorizations are explicitly permitted for backorder goods, custom orders, and subscription services. The merchant just has to reauthorize before the previous hold expires. It's called a re-auth, and it's completely routine in industries with long lead times.
The consumer sees a charge appear, disappear, reappear, and thinks their card is being hacked. Meanwhile, it's just a sofa working its way through a supply chain.
The sofa is ghosting them.
There's another layer here that I think is worth pulling on. The prompt mentions that authorizations show on credit card tracking apps, as if they were charges. But it's actually worse than that. Some of these apps, the budgeting ones, they'll categorize a pending authorization as shopping or dining and include it in your monthly spending totals before the transaction is even finalized.
Oh, this drives me absolutely up the wall. Apps like Mint, well, Mint is dead now, but its successors, YNAD, Copilot, Monarch, they ingest transaction data from aggregators like Plaid or Yodlee. And those aggregators don't always distinguish cleanly between pending authorizations and settled charges. So your budget app tells you you've spent $900 on restaurants this month, but $200 of that is a hold from a restaurant that hasn't finalized yet, and another $50 is a hold that will never finalize because it was a canceled online order.
The budgeting app is lying to you, but it doesn't know it's lying.
It's reporting what the API gives it, and the API is serving data that the issuer itself hasn't fully resolved. Some of the better apps now flag pending transactions with a "this amount may change" warning. Copilot does this, I think, but it's not universal.
How does that work in practice for someone who's trying to actually stick to a budget? If your app says you've blown past your restaurant budget by the 15th of the month, but $100 of that is phantom holds, do you just mentally adjust? Do you keep a separate spreadsheet? What's the workaround?
The practical workaround is to budget based on posted transactions only and treat pending authorizations as informational noise. Some apps let you filter by transaction status. If yours doesn't, the manual approach is to look at your budget app's total, subtract any pending transactions that are more than 2 days old, and use that as your real number. It's clunky, but it's accurate.
That's a lot of manual arithmetic for an app that's supposed to be automating your financial awareness.
And it points to a larger problem with the whole aggregator model. Plaid and Yodlee are essentially screen scraping your bank's web interface or using APIs that were designed for displaying transactions, not for providing a reliable ledger. They're downstream of the same visual ambiguity we've been talking about. Garbage in, garbage out.
The restaurant case is actually interesting as a specific subcase. You go out to dinner, the bill is $80. You add a $16 tip, the total should be $96. But when you look at your phone on the way home, the pending charge is $80. The tip hasn't been added yet. 3 days later, it posts as $96.
Because the authorization happens at the point of sale before the tip is added. The restaurant's point-of-sale system sends the pre-tip amount for authorization, and then when they batch out at the end of the night, they capture the full amount, including the tip. The card networks explicitly allow this. It's called a tip-adjusted final capture.
This is why servers will sometimes bring you the receipt and say, the pre-tip amount will show up on your card, but it'll adjust. They've been trained to preempt the confusion.
The good ones have. The ones who don't, or the ones working at restaurants where the training is minimal, they just hand you the terminal and walk away. And then you're in the car squinting at your banking app wondering if you accidentally undertipped or if the restaurant made an error.
Gas stations do something similar but weirder. You swipe at the pump, and before you've pumped a single drop, there's a hold on your card for some arbitrary amount. $50, $100, sometimes $150.
The gas station authorization is its own special category of consumer confusion. The pump doesn't know how much gas you're going to pump. You might fill a motorcycle or an RV, so the station places a hold for an amount that covers the maximum likely transaction. The actual charge, when it posts, is whatever you pumped. But that hold can sit on your account for days, and if you're near your credit limit, it can cause declines on subsequent purchases even though you only bought $30 worth of gas.
This actually happened to a friend of mine. He was on a road trip, stopped for gas, swiped at the pump, bought maybe $40 worth. Then he went to check into his hotel an hour later, and his card was declined. The gas station had placed a $150 hold that hadn't dropped off yet, and it pushed him right up against his credit limit. He had to call his issuer from the hotel lobby.
That's a textbook case. And it's especially dangerous when you're traveling because you're making multiple high-value transactions in sequence. Gas, hotel, rental car, restaurants, and each one is placing holds that overlap. Your actual spending might be well within your limit, but the sum of all the outstanding holds can make you appear maxed out.
If you pay at the cashier inside instead of at the pump, this doesn't happen. The hold is for the exact amount.
Paying inside is the workaround that almost nobody uses because it defeats the purpose of pay-at-the-pump convenience. But if you're on a road trip and you're near your credit limit, walking inside is the smart play. You trade 2 minutes of convenience for not getting declined at your next stop.
That's a useful travel tip. Pay inside at gas stations when you're on a road trip. I'm going to remember that.
Write it on a sticky note. Put it on your dashboard.
We've covered the mechanics. Let's get practical. If I'm a consumer staring at my banking app, trying to figure out whether a specific transaction is an authorization hold or a finalized charge, what's my step-by-step?
Step 1. Look at the transaction status. If it says pending, it's an authorization hold. The money has not left your account. This is true regardless of what the dollar amount says, regardless of what the merchant name says, regardless of whether you received the goods. Pending means reserved, not transferred.
Step 2. If you're not sure whether the app is showing you the status accurately, because some apps bury it, look at your available credit versus your current balance. If the amount is reflected in the gap between those two numbers, but not in the balance itself, it's a hold.
Step 3. Check if there's a posted date. A finalized charge will always have a posted date or a transaction date that's in the past. A hold will typically show only the date the authorization was placed, which is often today or yesterday. No posted date equals no finalized charge.
Step 4. Wait. I know nobody wants to hear, just wait, but authorization holds expire. If the transaction has been pending for more than 7 days, it's almost certainly going to drop off without ever posting. Unless it's from a hotel, car rental, or other extended authorization merchant category.
Step 5. If you've canceled an order and the pending charge is still there, do not dispute it. Disputing a pending authorization is like filing a noise complaint about a party that hasn't started yet. The hold will expire on its own. A dispute is for a posted charge you believe is incorrect.
That's a good distinction. People jump to the dispute button because it's the only tool the app gives them that feels like action.
The dispute button is the customer service equivalent of a fire alarm. It exists for emergencies, and pulling it when there's no fire creates a whole cascade of unnecessary processes. When you dispute a transaction, the issuer has to investigate, the merchant's processor gets involved, provisional credits get issued, and then if the hold just expires on its own anyway, all of that machinery was for nothing.
In the meantime, you've potentially flagged yourself as a customer who files disputes on pending transactions, which is not a great look if you ever have a legitimate dispute down the line.
That's a subtle point, but an important one. Issuers track dispute frequency. If you develop a pattern of disputing things that resolve themselves, you may find that legitimate disputes get more scrutiny. It's like crying wolf.
Let's talk about the regulatory side for a moment, because there's actually an interesting asymmetry here. In the United States, Regulation Z limits consumer liability for unauthorized charges to $50, and most issuers waive even that. But that protection applies to charges, not authorizations. An authorization hold that's placed in error, say a hotel authorizes your card for the wrong room, isn't covered by the same dispute framework.
Because technically, no money has been taken. The law is built around the movement of funds, not the reservation of funds. So if a merchant places an erroneous hold that ties up your credit for a week and causes you to miss a mortgage payment, you have almost no legal recourse beyond complaining to the merchant.
Which is wild, because the consumer harm is real. Tying up $1,000 of someone's credit line for a week is a meaningful inconvenience, even if the money never technically leaves. I mean, imagine you're a small business owner and a vendor accidentally authorizes $10,000 instead of $1,000. That's $9,000 of your credit line frozen for up to a week. You might not be able to make payroll.
That's not a hypothetical. I've heard from freelancers who had exactly that happen. A client's payment processor made an error on an authorization, and suddenly their business credit card was effectively unusable for a week. No legal remedy. Just waiting and apologizing to their own vendors.
It's one of those gaps where the legal framework hasn't caught up to the lived experience. The Electronic Fund Transfer Act and Reg E cover debit cards, and the rules there are slightly different. Debit holds actually do tie up cash in your checking account, which is arguably worse, but neither framework really addresses the temporary holder's harm problem.
With debit cards, the stakes are even higher because it's actual cash, not credit. If a gas station puts a $100 hold on your debit card, that's $100 of your checking account that you can't use for anything else until the hold drops. You could overdraft on a cup of coffee because a gas station hold hasn't cleared.
Which is why I've always said, never use a debit card for anything where a hold might be placed. Credit cards for hotels, car rentals, gas stations, restaurants. The hold goes against your credit line, not your checking account.
That's the single best piece of consumer advice in this entire episode. If you take nothing else away, take that. Debit cards and authorization holds are a dangerous combination.
What does a consumer actually do if a merchant places an erroneous hold and won't release it?
You can ask your issuer to remove it. Issuers have the ability to release authorization holds on request. It's called a hold release or an authorization reversal. But they're often reluctant to do it because, from their perspective, the merchant requested the hold in good faith and the issuer doesn't want to get caught in the middle if the merchant later tries to capture against a released authorization.
The issuer's default posture is talk to the merchant, and the merchant's default posture is it'll fall off on its own, and the consumer is stuck in the middle with a frozen credit line.
That's the triangle of frustration, and it's been this way for decades. The authorization hold mechanism was designed in the 1980s, when credit card transactions were processed in nightly batches, and nobody expected to see their balance update in real time. The system was built for a world where you checked your statement once a month, not once an hour.
That's the core of it, isn't it? The infrastructure is batch era. The consumer experience is real time. And the two are fundamentally incompatible in ways that produce phantom charges, ghost holds, and a lot of unnecessary anxiety.
And the card networks have actually tried to modernize this. Visa has something called Visa Transaction Control. MasterCard has something similar. These are APIs that allow for more granular, real-time authorization management. But adoption depends on issuers implementing them, and issuers move at the speed of banking, which is to say, glacially.
We're stuck with the batch era ghosts for the foreseeable future.
I think so. Which means the best defense is just understanding the mechanism. Once you know that a pending transaction is a reservation, not a transfer, most of the confusion dissolves. You stop seeing double charges where there are none. You stop panicking when a canceled order's authorization lingers for a few days. You stop calling customer service about things that resolve themselves.
There's a kind of consumer literacy that the system assumes but never teaches. Nobody explains authorization holds when you get your first credit card. The disclosure documents are 40 pages long, and the word authorization appears somewhere around page 12 in 8-point type.
The Card Act of 2009 improved a lot of credit card disclosures. It gave us the Schumer box, the clear presentation of rates and fees, but it didn't touch the transaction-level consumer experience. There's no requirement that issuers explain the difference between pending and posted. There's no requirement that apps distinguish clearly between holds and charges.
It's almost like the entire regulatory framework assumes that consumers understand the plumbing, when in reality, most people don't even know the plumbing exists. They just see numbers moving around and assume the worst.
The worst is usually wrong. That's the strange comfort here. The system is confusing, but it's not malicious. Most of the time, when something looks wrong, it's just a hold doing what holds do. The anxiety is real, but the underlying problem usually isn't.
Which brings us back to Daniel's question. How can a savvy consumer actually know the difference? The answer? Distilled. Pending equals hold. Posted equals charge. Check available credit versus balance. Look for a posted date. Wait 3 days before panicking. And never dispute a pending transaction.
That's the checklist. And I'd add one more, know your merchant categories. If it's a hotel, a car rental, a gas station, or a restaurant, expect holds that differ from the final amount. If it's an online order from a smaller retailer, expect a hold at purchase and a charge at shipment. The pattern is predictable once you know the category.
That's the kind of thing you could put on a wallet card. If credit card issuers actually wanted to be helpful, they'd include a little insert with every new card that explains exactly this.
Instead, we get balance transfer offers and travel insurance brochures.
The financial equivalent of junk mail. Meanwhile, the actual useful information is something you have to piece together from a podcast hosted by a sloth and a donkey.
We're doing the Lord's work, Corn.
Covering the covers.
There's one more thing I want to touch on, because the prompt mentions canceled transactions and the confusion around whether you were charged. There's a specific timing issue that trips people up. If you cancel an order within an hour of placing it, which happens all the time with online shopping, you realize you ordered the wrong size or whatever. The authorization hold may have already been placed, but the merchant hasn't captured the funds yet. In that case, the hold just expires. You were never charged. But if the merchant has already captured, which can happen within minutes with some systems, then canceling the order means you need a refund, which is a separate transaction that can take 3 to 5 business days to appear.
The same cancellation action produces two completely different financial outcomes, depending on exactly when you hit the cancel button relative to the merchant's capture schedule.
You, the consumer, have no way of knowing which scenario you're in until you see whether the transaction posts or vanishes.
That's the kind of ambiguity that makes people feel like the system is gaslighting them. Did I pay or didn't I? The answer is, it depends on a back-end process you can't see, and a timing window you can't know.
Which is why I always tell people, if you cancel an order, take a screenshot of the cancellation confirmation. Take a screenshot of the original order confirmation. Note the date and time of both. If a charge posts after cancellation, you have documentation. If a hold just sits there and expires, you have peace of mind.
Screenshots is consumer protection. We've come full circle. The most sophisticated payment infrastructure in human history, and the best defense is still, take a picture of your screen.
Some things are timeless. There's a reason, get it in writing, has been good advice since the Sumerians were pressing cuneiform into clay tablets. The medium changes, the principle doesn't.
All right, let's land this. The authorization hold versus charge distinction is one of those things that's technically simple. A hold reserves funds, a charge moves them, but practically confusing because the consumer-facing interfaces obscure the difference. Much of behavior is inconsistent, and the timing of captures relative to holds creates phantom transactions that look like double charges or failed refunds. The Savvy Consumer's Toolkit. Understand the pending versus posted distinction. Check available credit against balance. Know your high-risk merchant categories. Wait before panicking. And screenshot everything.
If you're really unsure, call your issuer and ask one specific question. Has this transaction posted, or is it still pending? Not, was I charged? That's ambiguous. Posted versus pending is the language the phone agent screen uses, and it's the most reliable information you can get.
That's the episode. One question, one distinction, and a lot of phone calls that don't need to happen.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
The Katabatic winds that sweep down from the Tian Shan Mountains in Kyrgyzstan are known locally as the Steppe's Exhalation, a name coined by Soviet meteorologists in 1973 after observing wind speeds exceeding 140 kilometers per hour near Lake Issyk-Kul. The name stuck because locals had independently called the winds the breath that knocks for generations before any scientific recording began.
The breath that knocks. That's unsettling.
Sounds like my allergies in April.
This has been My Weird Prompts, produced by Hilbert Flumentop. You can find every episode at myweirdprompts.com or search for us on Spotify. We'll be back soon.
Don't dispute the pending.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.